The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover...
Inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God, this is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, wherever you get your podcasts.
Enjoying this episode of The Late Show Pod Show? Then head to cohst.app/lateshow or visit the link in the description to fill out our quick 2-minute survey all about getting to know you.
It's The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Folks, my next guest is an Emmy Award-winning actor you know as Villanelle in Killing Eve. She's now making her Broadway debut in Prima Facie. Please welcome to The Late Show, Jodie Comer.
How are you? Hello.
So nice to talk to you for the first time.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Well, congratulations, first of all, for those people out there who don't know, the Olivier Award is the sort of the British Tonys, the live theatrical awards.
Yes.
And just this weekend, you won an Olivier Award for your performance in Prima Facie on the West End.
Yes.
That's nice.
Yeah, it was. It was lovely.
That's nice.
It was a bit of a whirlwind because we've been in the first week of rehearsals and we flew Saturday evening, arrived Sunday morning, the event was Sunday, and then we were all back on a flight on Monday morning. And the team are in here, by the way. Where are they? There they are.
There you go.
They're all in here.
That's nice.
Yeah.
So did you, in all of that, did you have any time to celebrate?
Yes. Always.
Okay. I don't know.
Yeah, we went to the after party.
Yeah.
Mum and Dad were there.
Brought my mum and dad
as my guests.
Is that?
Yes.
Oh, that's nice.
There they are. Well, look at them getting screen time.
That's nice. Gotta get a mum and dad's good side. There you go.
So we went to the after party, we all danced till very late, and then they went home and I got on my flight.
Well, you've got an Emmy already, you've got this. What do you do with your awards? Do you have like a special shelf with like lights?
I don't.
No?
Maybe that's what I have to do.
What are you going
to
do with it?
Well, my mum and dad have got it at the minute because they took it home because we had to leave. And they texted me actually the next day because they managed to get a free upgrade on the train. And
they just hauled it out? They just shook it
up? Well, I told my dad to put it in the bag. I was like, don't get it out the bag. So shameless, really, but he was carrying it. And he got a free upgrade on the train and he got a free lunch at his local pub. So, right?
Good turn of profit.
Fair enough.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it starts in previews this week on Broadway. What's it about?
It centers around a woman named Tessa Ensler, and she is from Liverpool. She's a criminal defense barrister. She's from a working class background, has had to work extremely hard to get to the position that she's in, hugely successful, and is often finding herself having to defend men in court who are accused of sexual assault. And then she is assaulted by a colleague who she works with, and she ends up being in the witness stand. So the story follows essentially how her life is turned upside down because everything that she's committed her life to is called into question.
And it's a one-woman show. Have you done a one-woman show before this?
No. No, wow. This is my first.
So you know you're on stage with an amazing cast.
Yeah. Well, I can't let myself down.
That's true. There's no one to yell at but you in the mirror at the end of the night.
And that's the most interesting thing, actually, what I learned was it's rhythm. Like, if the rhythm's off, the only person who can change it is you.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you ever get out of rhythm with yourself?
Yeah.
Why do you think that happens? I'm curious. As a performer, do you ever analyze like, oh, why did that hiccup arrive in the rhythm?
God, I think it's sometimes, I think it can just be energy. You know, if you're doing seven, eight shows a week, I think it can just be sometimes, you know, it's like some shows that you feel like, oh, that's so amazing. And then you have one where you're like, oh, I didn't quite land it. And I don't know what it is. Mm.
Sometimes I feel like it's up to me to like hook up my jumper cables to the audience so that we're
so you're dealing, in sync.
We're dealing with the same currency. Yeah. I don't know. We have the same sort of electricity running through our veins. And then anything I do, they do, and everything they do, I do.
Right.
Without violating the tenets of what I'm trying to create.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the other thing is like I've not really done a lot of theater before, and that's
I understand that you really hadn't done anything at this list, like you hadn't done West End work or anything like that.
No, this was the first.
And
yeah.
You yanked the Olivier Award the first time out
there. I yanked it.
I mean, you snagged it. Whatever. You know what I mean? Like, bravo.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, oh. It was amazing. It was amazing to all be there with the team, and you know, the play won for best play, and Susie Miller, our writer, she's so incredible. So it was brilliant.
You're known for your ability to do a variety of accents, especially as Villanelle, you know, in Killing Eve. You yourself have a lovely Liverpudlian accent, you know.
Thank you. I'm glad you think so.
Oh, I do. No, exactly. I mean, we're here in the Ed Sullivan, and you sound like the fifth Beatle.
I'll take it. I'll take
exactly.
That.
Exactly. A lot of people break themselves of their accents because they feel like it's sort of going to be limiting.
Yeah.
How do you feel about your native accent?
I love it. There was a time when I was younger that I thought I had to change it. Mm-hmm. Again, because there used to be a lot of working class stories in like the 80s, and then we kind of got into the Downton Abbeys, the upstairs, downstairs. And I kind of just thought as well, I really wanted to do musical theatre and go to drama school, and I had this kind of voice that I had to change it. And it was Stephen Graham, actually, who's a friend, an actor, and he was like, don't you dare. He's like Liverpool through and through, and he was like, don't you dare. And now I love to be able to kind of celebrate that and explore the women who I really, truly know. So it's really great, yeah.
Is there a particular word in your you know, native accent,
yeah.
I would say, that's tough for you to break out of? Like, there's something, does the Liverpool sneak in at times when you're doing other things?
Not really, no. Are there slang words?
What?
Like slang words.
Yeah, like slang words. Or literally, like, just like, you know, instead of saying something, you might say like, summit, like that. You know, like, you might do something like that.
Well, if you was like, if something's good, you say like, oh, that's boss.
Oh, yeah.
That's boss.
Yeah, we say that too in 1985. That's boss. I love it, though. That's fantastic. Anything else?
You'd say, God, it's chocker in here.
Chocker?
Yeah, chocker.
What's that mean?
It's busy.
Chocker.
Yeah.
C-H-O?
C-H-O-C-K-A, maybe.
Chocker.
I don't know.
Do you ever know why that word is that word?
No.
All right.
Yeah.
You learn something new every
day. You're
going
to use them? No.
I am. It's always chocker in here. you're in D's. Have you spent much time in New York before?
No, not an awful lot. I've been here for, like, the odd day for work stuff, but this is, like, an extended period of time.
So what are you looking forward to being in the Big Apple?
Ooh, I'm going to see Bruce Springsteen.
Fantastic.
Right. That's a pretty good way to celebrate.
Are you going to go see him, like, perform, or are you just going to knock on the door at some point?
Perform.
Okay, great. Fantastic. Yeah. Well, it's a big, beautiful city. I hope you enjoy it.
Thank you very much. This was a great way to start it.
Oh, it was our pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Previews
Steven.
For a Prima Facie start April 11th at the Golden Theater. Jodie Comer, everybody. We'll be right back.
Up next, John David Washington.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Late Show Poncho listeners can get 20% off on all Late Show with Stephen Colbert merchandise on ParamountShop.com. That's 20% off at checkout on all Late Show shirts, mugs, accessories, and more with code TLS20 at ParamountShop.com.
My first guest is an actor you know from Ballers, Black Klansman, and Tenet. He now stars as Boy Willie in The Piano Lesson on Broadway. Please welcome to The Late Show, John David Washington. There you go. Wow. Nice to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
Now, currently making your Broadway debut in August Wilson's The Piano Lesson. There's a playbill from opening right there. Okay, that's an extraordinary experience. When you go to work, your work is at a Broadway theater. When you go to the Barrymore Theater, does it sink in? I mean, you already have a well-established career, but what's it like to be on Broadway, to be headlining something like that?
It's a tremendous blessing. It feels like I'm in the big leagues. You know, like every time I'm going in there, I'm a part of history. The Barrymore history, yeah. August Wilson history, the man who originated the role I'm playing, Sam Jackson, you know, his history, you know, yeah. So and
sharing the stage.
Sharing the stage with him. Sam Jackson is, wow. So I just, so a lot of pressure, obviously, too, but I feel welcomed and I feel like I belong.
Well, the play is 2 hours and 20 minutes long, and your character, Boy Willie, talks for almost the entire thing. You know, it's like King Lear. How do you memorize that much material?
I have no idea. I mean, repetition.
It is a little miraculous to be able to grab that much stuff and hold it in your head.
It's a tall task, but it's really about setting my intentions, knowing why I'm saying these words and knowing who I'm saying them to. You know, and once I got to understand the plight of this character and understanding the Jim Crow South, which he's from, and understanding the history of our people and the history of the Charles family, his family, it makes the words come to life. And you realize that how great these words that August Wilson wrote are when you understand your mission behind these words.
The better the writing, the easier it is to memorize, is what I have found. No?
No? Sometimes bad writing, you can cover up with an ad-lib here and a there, but not with this. This is like Shakespeare. You know, you can't ad-lib, you can't add stuff. You got to say the words and use the words. And when you respect the words, they work for you.
The part of Boy Willie, as you were saying, was originated by Samuel Jackson in 1987. Now he's your co-star. When you're on stage, I mean, certainly not when you're in the midst of performance, but there were any time in the process of making this, in the rehearsal process, we thought, I wonder what he would have done in this moment. Or did you feel any pressure because he was right there?
All kinds of pressure. Somewhat like, I wonder what he would have done in this moment. Another like, I hope I'm not disappointing him. He's looking at me crazy right now. Am I messing up?
Is he in character, or is this Sam, you know?
a tremendous amount of pressure, but also I feel so much support from him. You know, he's been very gracious and so helpful and influential in my development in my own way for the character.
Well, he thinks the world of your performance, and I don't know whether you saw him when he was on this show back in September, but he talked about how he wasn't really allowed to talk to you about this, because, of course, his wife is the director.
Absolutely. She runs the show.
And this is what he said about your performance.
But the audience is really like, oh, my God. You know, they're like, they love him so much because they believe what he wants and what he's doing. And I believe it. And I'm moved by it. And I'm sitting there just like, this is a great play to do every night. I'm sitting there enjoying the play and, you know, hoping that it's like, oh no, did I miss my line?
Yes. Oh, man. He's a tough critic. You know, yes. he's very hard to please. So I feel that, I mean, that's great. That's very moving that he said that. And, it's interesting. I feel supported every time we do that play. Like, the way he looks at me in character, like, it feels like he's a proud uncle. He and Potts, Michael Potts, too, who's playing my other uncle, mm-hmm. Whining Boy. I just feel such a comfort and support from them, because also they were hazing me during the rehearsal process. I had these banana chips once. He's like, "Boy, really don't eat no banana chips, 1936. What is that? Better get some pork rinds." I'm like, man, like, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, pork rinds. You're right. So, but he's ahead of the game, huh? Boy Willie's thinking ahead. They go, mm-hmm. Yeah, he's just little stories like that that I appreciate. Yeah.
Well, we have to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with more John David Washington, everybody. Stick around. Star of The Piano Lesson at the Barrymore Theater on Broadway, John David Washington. The Piano Lesson is
about a family's prized family heirloom, the piano, yes. piano itself. Do your parents, Denzel and Paul out of Washington, does the Washington family have any prized heirlooms? Any things that they hold on to?
Well, I mean, they've definitely passed on the art of prayer and, you know, spirituality. Mm-hmm. And I certainly insert it in every aspect of my life. And something also is this, my uncle's chain. It's my mother's brother. And she got, when he passed away, and she got it and she gave it to me. And it's actually, I'm wearing that chain on the front of the playbill. Yeah, so it's right there. It's a little piece of it right there. So it's always a reminder that he's always with me and something that I can just hold on to and, you know, it's something very deep, close to my heart.
Right. Do you, when you say, like, your prayer, your prayer practice, do you have a favorite prayer you go back to, or is it always sort of improvisational when you go in?
I got some go-to since I was, like, 8 years old. God bless Mom, Dad, Rita, Rick, Nikki, Olivia, Malcolm.
Like, and then, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, right? I mean, I go, those are some of my strong go-tos, and other times I'm like, yo, you know what it is. I need you. Appreciate it. I just need you. You know what time to. You know?
It's like, why are we taking the time? Why are you taking the time to lay out all your problems? He knows.
He knows. You know what it is. So please help me.
Well, your family's no stranger to the stage. Did your folks give you any advice before you did Broadway for the first time?
Yes. My mom, actually, she's seen it about 29 times, including last night.
Oh, that's a mom.
Had notes for me still. You know, she took me to dinner. I'm thinking I'm doing great. Like, so, thoughts? I was like, oh, man. I'm like, this is, you know, we're
these
in December.
These are in no particular order.
Yeah, exactly. No, literally, though, she said that.
I'm staging Samuel.
right. Yeah. The jump, just make it higher. But no, just great, yeah, they're great supportive at parents. My father talks about owning your space and just, you know, believing what you're saying. My mother the same way.
Oh, I love that, owning the space. What does that mean for you?
Well, just, you know, standing strong and not being afraid to stay still and deliver the lines at times, and then don't be afraid to move, turn, and talk to your partner at times. Finding your power spots on stage, you know, that feel the most comfortable and natural for the character to be in while delivering a certain part of the monologue or the conversation.
Where's your power spot?
I can't tell you that. I guess you gotta...
That gives away the family secrets?
Yeah. All right. Because I'm trying to manipulate to get this piano for the character, so I can't give away my power spots.
Well, the funny thing is that the reason I ask is that when I first started this job, it was before I was first announced that I was going to take over for Dave. Mm-hmm. We came in early on a Saturday morning. Remember, Tom? Because we didn't want to bother anybody here getting in their stuff. So we came in at 8 a.m. on a Saturday morning so we wouldn't bother anybody just to see, because we knew the theater would be transformed. Uh-huh. And I was wondering where I would want to stand on stage to do the monologue. So I walked around various places and I said, hey, could you move this pile of boxes that was here? I want to stand right up, see what that feels like. Yeah. So they moved it and I stood there and I went, yeah, this feels right. This feels like where you would do it. And I looked down and between my feet was the red dot where Dave stood.
No kidding.
And I went, of course this is where you would do the monologue. This is the only place that feels good. And it's hard to explain that feeling.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have anything that deep. I can't say, Sam stood here when I got that. But there is something to be said about knowing when it does feel truthful. You know, I know the great Steve Henderson, who's like a mentor to me, who's actually on Broadway right now as well. He told me, don't get it right, get it true. Mm. So instead of aiming your performance, try to be, you know, as truthful as possible. So sometimes there's certain positions and body position you have, posture, that allows you to tell the best truth of the character at the time. So, you know, find that. And it varies a lot of different nights. It could be different. So that's what's exciting about live theater. You know, just be open to that change and being able to go with it.
Well, John David, it was lovely to meet you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert. Just one more thing. If you want to see more of me, come to The Late Show YouTube channel for more clips and exclusives.
Hey, everyone, it's David Duchovny. Do you ever feel like a failure? Trust me, I get it. Hell, I've spent my whole life almost feeling like a failure. It's appropriate, though, because on Fail Better, my new podcast with Lemonada Media, exploring the world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives, is the whole point. Each week, I'll chat with artists, athletes, actors, and experts about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, I hope we can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out on May 7th, wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Rachel Martin. After hosting Morning Edition for years, I know that the news can wear you down. So we made a new podcast called Wild Card, where a special deck of cards and a whole bunch of fascinating guests help us sort out what makes life meaningful. It's part game show, part existential deep dive, and it is seriously fun. Join me on Wild Card, wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.